Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
This program was sponsored by White Oak Pastures. The Harris family has lived and farmed White Oak Pastures for 145 years. They are committed to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. Their mission? We take care of the land and the herd, and they take care of us. For more information about their cattle and their farm, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio. I am coming to you live from Sacramento at this time, where it has just finished raining. Thank goodness, and all the fruit trees are in bloom. And today is a good day. Now, who's on my phone with me today? I don't know who's on with me. Who are you?
This is Jenny O'Burton calling you from the other side, down on the coast in Gouldsboro, Maine.
Holy smokes! And how's the weather over there?
Well, we started the day down here on the coast at about 10 degrees, and now we're up to about 30. It was down in the single digits last night, and so things are melting off. We just have just a little bit of snow on the ground and clear skies. The horses are starting to shed, and the cashmere goats are starting to let their fibers go, and so it's feeling like a nice February day.
Well, that's such a nice thing when you've got clean, fresh snow and fuzzy muzzles. One of the benefits of horse farming.
with the fjord horses, though, they definitely shed out pretty quick. And so if you treasure your black clothing, fjord horses aren't the horses for you. So.
All right, so there you are in Maine, and you're farming with horses at Mondula Farm. And I found my little cheat sheet. I'm sorry, that was slow. Everybody I know who's been in Down East World says how wonderful you are, just so you know. The love is very big and wide.
Well,
we had Sophia Bates on the radio the other day, and she was singing your praises as well.
Oh, great. So, great. Well, Sophia was here a bunch of years back, and, she's an inspiring farmer on the West Coast for certain, and, helped us along quite a bit in those years, and, so it's hard that things are so far, obviously, between us, she has great motivation and awesome skills. So, we've been trying to do this farming for it'll be 10 years on February 20th. That's our farmiversary, and when we started here in Gouldsboro, and a lot has definitely changed since the beginning. I burned in some stuff in the cook stove, and we were cleaning out the filing cabinets and looking at our revenue for 2004 compared to what our expenses are here in 2012. It's pretty wild how much we've grown. So,
how quickly we grow, how quickly things happen. So let's lay out a little bit for the folks listening. What's your operation, and how long did it take to get you there, and what's the market like in coastal Maine for the products you're growing?
Well, here we are. We're on Scutic Peninsula, which is just across from Frenchman's Bay to Acadia National Park, the other section, the large section of Acadia National Park, where Bar Harbor is. And so our market is our peninsula, but also to the summer markets of Bar Harbor, primarily on where Bar Harbor is. It's Acadia National Park. It's also referred to as Mount Desert Island. So over on Mount Desert Island, there's probably about 180 restaurants, food service places. We only work closely with about 7 restaurants over there. What we're producing is 3 to 4 acres in mixed vegetables that we cultivate with the fjords, as well as we're a state-licensed poultry producer, so we fall under what's a grower-producer exemption, which allows us to raise and slaughter right here on the farm and sell on the farm, but also off-farm. And so that's part of our product is fresh poultry processed once a week in the summer months. We also raise Tamworth pigs, I just delivered another 15 to the butcher yesterday. So this winter we reared 34 feeder pigs for our spring and summer inventory out of our walk-in freezer. And we raise the pigs primarily on grain, but we also supplement them with squash, other root crops. I try to hold out on apples as late as I can, but that's just really a small supplement. Being down on the coast here, we are relatively isolated from other farming endeavors, and so I'm trying to get the gleaning from other bigger farm operations or similar farm operations a little bit more difficult. So that's but we raise the Tamworth pigs, and we keep about 150 laying hens, so we have fresh eggs. The sheep and goats are primarily for fiber, although we do eat some of them every now and again. The goats are cashmere goats that we're combing out for the fiber, and the sheep are just a motley crew of because we like having them around at this point. We used to keep quite a few more sheep, but now it's just a motley crew. And then we have our legendary milk cow, Annabelle, who's been our farm cow for about 9 years. We've been off and on milking her, so.
That's when you know you're succeeding, and you have your own cream. Could you reflect a little bit on the market flow moving from a vegetable into more diversified animal situation and how that looks from your bookkeeping end?
Sure. Vegetables is the most profitable point of the bookkeeping. You don't have your inputs are so much less than you do with any of the other items, and that's also because you're not trying to maintain something 12 months of the year. You know, obviously you go fallow or cover crop or however way you want to look at it. But the having the diverse product allows us to I think it built the vegetable sales build the pork sales, which then also build the chicken sales. Chicken is probably second in line to profitability. Again, we're not maintaining breeder stock with the chickens. We're getting them as day-old chicks shipped in. So they the chicken probably falls in the second category, and then the pigs. Are profitable, but they are expensive to raise. When we're birthing piglets, we realize that every piglet that we lose in mortality is right off the bat with selling them. That's about $100 a piglet if we lose one at birth. And so we spend a lot of time in the barn trying to keep our mortality as low as possible because we have it figured out. I think we need eight. It's either six or eight piglets a year per sow to just cover that sow's cost of living. And but in the end, when you mix all of those things up, the farm is fuller. The intent of our operation is more complete. And so we like to interact with the pigs. We I can't say I like to process poultry, but I do process the poultry. But with the sheep and goats as well, their value as meat is much less. But the sheep and goats for us have been an excellent clearing tool and also pasture management. So they have values that don't just end up in when the item is sold.
And are you using your hogs to clear brush with, or are they in a barn situation, or what? In the wintertime, they must be inside.
Well, we keep them out. We've done it both ways. I definitely have reared them as feeder pigs completely outside all winter. I used to have a bunch more homemade huts, and now I've slowly been getting a porta-hut situation, which is more like a culvert, a big galvanized, keeps the wind out completely, and they're pretty durable. And so with those guys, but the problem outside is that here on the coast of Maine, we don't keep a constant freeze, and so that freeze-thaw, I end up with a serious mud issue, and so it's a constant battle with bedding and trying to keep them in better ground. And so the first group of pigs this winter, they went the beginning of January. Actually, they went in December up to the butcher. So they were outside from when they were born this summer straight through. It was, we actually had a very mild winter. Their conditions kept really well. I was able to keep them outside. The later batch, I ended up moving into the barn for the last couple months of their lives here. And what I have come to do is put them in the barn on concrete, and then I bed them in hay and straw and sawdust and wood chips, and then I load them up into the trailer, get them out of the barn, and then I scrape the barn out, and then I set them up again, so I'm able to keep a much better environment in the barn, but also, so I kind of do a little bit of both. I think that having that barn and changing the bedding out is probably the best case scenario on how to handle them so that that you can keep them dry and you know, relatively warm. We don't try to keep our barn hot. We don't want them to catch a cold if the barn doors are open, but that we can just keep them dry.
And what are your regs around chickens, and how many are allowed to do on the farm in Maine?
Well, for the grower-producer exemption that we fall under, we can do 0 to 20,000, and all of those birds. We only do about 1,200 or so birds a season, just to kind of put a little size on it. But that 1,200 birds, we raise them and process them here on the farm, which then allows us to sell them to any market we want. We get inspected once a season by the state as far as our facility goes. So that allows us then to move them out. If we wanted to bring other people's birds in and process them, then that would take our exemption away, and then we'd actually would have to have a state employee standing at the slaughterhouse for any processing that we do. So we have back, Maine had the grower-producer exemption was 1,000 birds or less, and then there was no oversight by the state, and that was used to be just considered off-farm sales or on-farm sales. At one point, they considered the tailgate of a farmer to be extension of their farm, but then things had kind of gotten a little murky and changed, and then they backtracked. And so we just stepped up to the having that annual inspection by the state. Our space qualified prior to them even needing to come out anyway. So we that's what we ended up doing, was jumping up to that 0 to 20,000 bird level.
And you had good clarity with the state Department of Ag, and it was pretty clean and obvious how you could.
Yeah, short answer is yes. I had a very good experience with the Department of Ag. The initial question went out to them, and they called me back, and they sent me a set of plans on, or some sketches on, what meets their criteria, and I made sure that we did and had gotten it all ready. And then when they came up for an inspection, they were. That first inspection, the state poultry vet came as well as the inspector, and we spent a couple hours walking through, talking about lots of different things to do with poultry and just processing rooms in general. And they've been very helpful. And
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it was good. And I told him right up front. I said, I'm a little nervous. I usually feel this as more of a regulatory interaction than a fostering of ideas and process than more. And they were that way. And I was it made me a little bit less apprehensive to give them a call. So
that's nice that the Ag Department is acting more like a coach than a regulator, at least at first.
I mean, in our case, they definitely were, and the state inspector that comes every year has been very helpful for us. Again, I don't think that we fall into any gray areas that might be questionable, where where that might change their position on interacting with us. You know, the dairy here in Maine is kind of another level where us smaller farmers, you know, what they want us to have as far as space is and having isolated spaces is potentially burdensome because of the just the cost of building all that infrastructure for. I mean, we have one family cow, so if I was going to then turn that cow into a commercially viable dairy operation, you know, what does that really mean? And that's a question actually I'm going to be bringing up with them this spring, because we are potentially moving into that direction of having a few more cows.
Cool.
And getting the dairy.
That's exactly my next question. What's your next big move?
Well,
what's the moves for the region? Like, how does what you're moving correspond to what other people are doing and what opportunities are starting to emerge there?
The, where we are in Hancock County is very small in the farm category as far as number of farms, number of land being, you know, amount of land being tilled compared to Waldo County, Penobscot County, Piscataquis County. You know, that's where the, as far as Maine goes, that's where the big F is in farming. In our area, we are being successful by being small and diverse because we get a lot more direct sales in our area because we are closer to a bigger population right here on the coast. And so the direction that we're moving in is we always try to keep as the forefront is more integration of our horses into what we do. We've been trying to realize that idea from, you know, 02 every season, trying to integrate them more into how we manage our vegetables, how we move things around the farm, so that they can become more of a part of it. Now, my next thing is going to be nothing about the horses in the sense that, well, if we're going to get into the dairy, I have the processing room I need to finish up. We are in the process of a composting heavy use area that's an NRCS cost share, so that we can manage our compost a little bit better. Right now, we're not covering it, so we're definitely losing some of the quality of our compost. And since we have so much of our inputs generated right here on the farm, we have the potential of having much higher quality compost because we don't have to buy all of that. You know, here in Maine, a lot of folks buy in chicken manure from other operations, bigger operations, where we're saving out all our pig manure, our cow manure when the cows, the other couple cows that are in the barn, that horse manure is getting composted, the poultry manure from our laying houses. So that heavy use area is one thing that we're kind of dealing with right now. And as far as the area goes, I think that there's just that continuing growth of small farms that's happening. I don't think that right around this area there's one particular trend that's going on other than more people are wanting to do it, and which is a great thing. And so to our farmer markets that we oversee, you know, there's a lot more people wanting to participate. There's more little farmer, other farmers markets that are popping up in the area. You see more folks, you know, peddling on the side of the road their farm products, which is also great. And so I think that there's just more people trying to sell their, you know, sell what they're harvesting off their land. So
more is better. Just a couple for people who are not so familiar with coastal Maine, the products that are grown there, obviously blueberries and vegetables, but people may not know that there's also a very lively aquaculture business going on. Frenchman's Bay has oysters. Up further along, Grand Manan is a lot of seaweed harvesting. What else, what am I forgetting to talk about? You guys have the beautiful acres.
Yeah, there's oysters. There's a lot of rope mussels that happen in this area. A little bit further around, there's some more penned fish pens that are happening. But the There's definitely on our peninsula right here. There's a few folks that are seaweed harvesters that are bringing product in that way. But mussels is also a big roping of mussels is quite big. And that's the other part of coastal Maine is that, you know, obviously fishing and the fishing industry is huge here. And there's a big potential, I think, for folks that are fishing to transition into some of this. Now, coastal Maine has a lot of field. There's a lot of land that has potential, and a lot of it just gets mowed for view sheds that's really not being harvested for their hay, partially because there's not that many farmers still left in the area. The other part is that our weather conditions. There's an old-timer down in on the other side of the county from us here who's in his 80s, and he kept a notebook in his pocket. He said, since he was a boy, and he was a hay farmer, and he told me that back in the early days, you know, 30 years or better ago, they were getting 3 weeks of consistent haying weather right here on the coast. He could bring up, make excellent hay for about a three-week window. Now, we're really lucky at times if we can get those 4 days in a row to make hay here without getting an afternoon shower or having a heavy fog roll in, you know, on the coast. And so that's part of the challenge for around here is that, sure, we can wait to much later in the season to try to cut some hay, but you're going to get much poorer quality. You're going to lose your seed by that point. You're going to end up with just a real stemmy harvest. And so the hay has got a lot of potential here. And I think that some of the farming, believe it or not, if some of the fishermen were interested in making some hay and working it out with their fishing, I think would be a great blossom of activity for some of these fields that just have sat over the years. They get mowed, so there's not getting brush growing up through them, but they really aren't getting utilized.
That sounds like a good plan. I want to make sure to tell you about the seed circus that we're planning up at Common Ground Fair in September. There's going to be a multimedia tent of fun things for kids during the day. I want to make sure that if you have any call-outs for organizations or grant programs or people who helped you along, that you get to tell about them and suggest to those who are considering farming in Maine how they might do that the best.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely had utilized over the years the Soil Conservation Association when here in Maine that we found them to be real helpful. Same thing with the cooperative extensions that offer. MOFCA has been an excellent resource to us. Neither Sarah nor I did a straight apprenticeship through MOFCA, but we get quite a few folks that work for us in the summertime through the apprentice program, and anyone that's looking to get started, they have a wealth of resources there to help connect people with the type of farming that they're interested in, and they get a chance to meet the farmers and see if the personalities work and their processes work for folks, and that's I think has been an excellent way for young farmers to make the step, or older folks, you don't have to be young to turn into a farmer. The other thing that's starting out is that we actually just have started a nonprofit of our own called Farm Tomorrow, and we are this season will be our startup season where we're going to be offering quite a few workshops here at our farm on draft horse use, as well as trying to integrate with other farms to act as the bridge to tie some more educational opportunities here in coastal Maine, not just in coastal Maine, but here in Maine for folks interested in learning different farming methods or practices, draft power, as well as some smaller tractor operations. We've been starting to connect with the Antique Tractor Association here in Maine. You know, there's a lot of far older timers, if you will, that have a wealth of knowledge that are just enjoying their retirement years with some of the equipment that would be perfectly sized for the size farm that we have, but also what I would think a lot of folks are very interested in doing, you know, the 10 to 40 acre farm, you know, a few acres in vegetable production, some grazing, and that that I think that the tractor folks have a lot to offer us folks on figuring out some of this older equipment as well as sourcing it out, because we don't need to go out and buy the latest and greatest. That there's a lot of stuff still sitting in barns and on the stone walls that would be very productive and bring a lot more food to the table.
Well, we can't get off the phone without making one more plug, which is Emily has gone through and documented your all-in-one Annie for Farm Hack. It sounds like we should be talking Farm Hack together. We'll do that off the air, but we just want to briefly tag the all-in-one, what's it called? Jenny? Annie?
I'm not sure. You guys say that again to me.
Oh. Weren't you part of the team, or was it Darcia Farm? There, it's a cultivator that you modified, and now it's painted red, and Sophia has it going out west.
I don't think Sophia's been talking to me about that. I didn't help her make that up, but maybe she brought some ideas along with her cultivator. We talked about some of the cultivation design and the way things, you know, what I thought, but that's definitely her brainchild and the machinist that she's been working with out there.
I think there's a lot of potential for those relationships, and I'm really glad to hear that you've got energy for it too. So I'll be bothering you, and I thank you so much. We'll link to your Farm Tomorrow program off our blog and from the radio thing, and thanks for joining.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you all listening. This is Greenhorn Radio, Heritage Radio Network. We are happy to be here. Bye.